My name is Michael Rodriguez. Today is April 8th, 2000. This is 15?
It is
2015. We're interviewing Robin Silberglied. Do I pronounce your name correctly?
Silberglied.
Glide. I'm sorry.
German. It's okay.
You are the only Silberglied in the Monolanguages Association International Bibliography. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't, but that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So Robin gave a reading a couple months ago. We didn't have time to do the interview, so we're doing it today. That's all there is to it. I have a number of questions. As I just said, I didn't realize you were such an academic. I went to the Modern Language Association International Bibliography and just to check out all the things that you've published in the last 10 years or so, and it's very broad.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that.
Okay.
I should give you an actual question, which would be, you know, you're balancing an academic, what looks like, anyway, a traditional academic career with mm-hmm. a creative one.
Balancing is an interesting word.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Does one come before the other? Or, I mean, the Michigan Writers series was, and that's another issue altogether, was more or less a reading of excerpts from Texas Girl mm-hmm. and from poetry chapbooks.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole other bunch of stuff out there.
Yeah, well, I guess, maybe the thing to do would be to back up. So, I mean, I when I went to graduate school, you know, had the, mm-hmm. the sit-down, or planned to go to graduate school, had the sit-down with my faculty mentor who said, well, you're going to do a PhD or you're going to do an MFA. And it hadn't really occurred to me that that was a choice, right, mm-hmm. that one had to make. And this was, I guess, the mid-90s. And she encouraged me, for reasons that may or may not still be applicable, to do the PhD route. So I started doing that, ended up in a program that is very compatible with doing both scholarship and, creative
Indiana.
Work, Indiana.
Yeah.
We had to have, and I assume the program is still set up this way, a minor. And there was a minor in creative writing. And since I'd done a whole lot of work as an undergrad in creative writing, I took that approach. So I had two minors, one in critical theory and one in creative writing, which probably answers some of your just logistical questions.
Mm-hmm.
Came out of graduate school with a dissertation, a scholarly dissertation, right? It was in American fiction, and then a book of poetry. And I think that pairing actually was what allowed me to get my first job and perhaps even to a certain extent my current position here. So I travel back and forth. At this point, I'm tenured. My work coming up for tenure was largely on the scholarly side. Like, I guess my work wasn't, but what I was getting published was largely mm-hmm. on the scholarly side. Even though those book manuscripts, the creative book manuscripts, were finished. And so right now I've kind of tipped more in the creative writing side of mm-hmm. things, just with these three books coming out, right, in like an 18-month window, which is really, it's really fast. But I don't imagine that the scholarship has gone away for me. It's just, you can only do so much over the course of a day, right?
So did you get an MFA after your PhD?
No,
I did it
concurrently, which
concurrently.
I don't recommend.
I didn't know you could do that.
You can. And actually, again, I know a bunch of folks at IU.
Or you were just a really hard worker.
No, I know a bunch of folks at IU who did the same thing.
Really?
When I was there and subsequently and currently just wrote a letter of recommendation for a former MSU student who's there doing the same thing. And, he was just accepted, which is amazing. And it's wonderful to continue that tradition. So I guess it's a good program if you want to, do both kinds of activity.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if you come out of a program like that, I mean, I guess I don't want to talk about myself, but when I got my degree, it was in the 90s, and, it was one or the other. It was, you set yourself up to get a creative job or an academic job.
Yeah.
You weren't doing both.
I don't think that's the case anymore.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, I think,
But you're head of the creative writing program here.
I am.
Okay. Okay.
Well, maybe we should talk about the job market
yeah.
another time.
Yeah, that's true. That absolutely. Well, maybe there is a crossover because the book Texas Girl is memoir.
Yeah.
Now, and you get into this sort of strange territory where you're talking about academic publishing, and memoir is not, well, is it creative? Is this part of the creative world? Because it's nonfiction.
Yeah.
And actually, one of your articles is about Tim O'Brien and autobiographical metafiction, which I'd never heard of before. I saw that citation.
I sort of made it up.
So what is there a crossover between academic work and, well, there's biography. That's academic work. But autobiography, memoir, I'm just not sure.
Well, I mean, I think there's kind of two questions there, right? I mean, there's that kind of big field question, right, about the relationship between those two halves. And there's certainly, a fair number of scholars out there who are also poets, right? I mean, Alicia Ostriker and Rachel DuPlessis, Diane Friedman. I think more women than men. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe I'm just running into their work more frequently, or maybe that is a legitimate thing that's happening. And I think it's interesting that you're asking about memoir and creative nonfiction, because I think if there is, you know, kind of Venn diagram of fields, maybe the place where they intersect most clearly is with kind of autobiographical literary criticism, right? Which is something that I also kind of dabble in. Maybe not dabble, that's not really the right word. This would be something to edit out. But I do engage in, I'm interested in, and have a piece actually in the recent issue of Four Genre that is sort of a hodgepodge creative criticism, personal essay thing. So I do think that there's an overlap, you know, depending on how one pursues it.
There's a lot of personal essays in journals that are devoted to fiction and poetry and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a weird thing called, we'll probably have to edit this out. Now I'm blanking on the title, a critical review.
Mm-hmm.
So there's these kind of genres within what we usually call like new letters, you know, the mm-hmm. journal, which publishes all kinds of different things, all within one cover. So there's not, you know, sometimes people aren't making these distinctions at all. And I know that one of your pieces is about Carol Masso. I think that's in your website, which is part...
Yeah.
Creative,
yeah,
part
absolutely.
Critical,
yeah,
study,
yeah.
So, what is that?
That book, or
no? How do you go about treating something like that? And I guess I am kind of getting to the point where I'm wondering about who publishes it and what is the audience.
Well, that book has yet to be under contract. So, maybe we could talk about that in a year once it's actually. Sent out. But I think, it's interesting the direction of this conversation. I mean, one of my concerns, though, as a scholar is, I mean, a real belief that, I mean, you can't pretend that literary criticism is a science, right? Mm-hmm. That's objective. And so once you acknowledge that, I mean, there's a whole lot of kind of personal work, and I don't, you know, mean personal in incredibly intimate ways, but we have to acknowledge the fact that whoever we are, right, as critics, necessarily affects the kind of work, right, that we produce.
Absolutely.
And Masso in particular is a writer who kind of invites that work. I mean, there's, I don't know if you've looked at her book, Ava, but I mean, there's literally like fill in the blank sections. And so it's asking for audience participation. And to do that kind of work justice, I think demands an alternate critical practice.
Okay.
So that's what I'm playing with on the scholarly side of things. And I hope there is an audience for it. I think, you know, some of the work, put out by, I mean, Grey Wolf right now, I mean, is certainly really interesting. It's sort of, I mean, Claudia Rankine, right? Her work is criticism, it's poetry, it's essay, it's all over the place.
So is there such a thing as creative critical work?
I think,
not creative critical, experimental critical.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because I know one of your interests is experimental writing, which could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, I think genre is going away, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. What tells you that, besides what you've just said, I suppose?
Well, I mean, the large number of books that are being produced, particularly in these sort of hybrid spaces. Is it prose poetry? Is it... Mm. You know, lyric essay, which already suggests a kind of hybridity, right? I mean, where are the lines between these things? So we were talking, just yesterday in class about Claudia Rankine's Citizen, which is this amazing, amazing book, right? And it was nominated for National Book Critics Circle Award in both poetry and criticism. And so I have students saying, okay, this is prose, right? Where's the poetry here? Is it poetry just because it's been written by a poet? I don't know. I mean, it certainly plays with metaphor and those sorts of things, but it defies, right? I mean, a really strict categorization.
Prose, right. Prose poetry has been around for a long time, though.
Absolutely.
Does not, I wouldn't call that experimental. And I don't want to get into the conversation of what is experimental, because I don't know that we could get anywhere with that. Maybe we could. So, all right, these are hard questions, actually. I don't usually ask questions that are this hard, but I'm just going through these things and just going, she's broad in the way she goes about being a scholar and a writer.
Yeah, well, I don't think about, I mean, so I have the 2 degrees. When the director of graduate studies was writing me a letter at one point in graduate school, wrote that I had dual degrees, DUEL, and of course that was just a typo, but it seems appropriate on some level too. But I don't think about them as really discrete things. I mean, I think of myself as a writer, and I work in multiple genres, and criticism, right, is one of those genres, and you just make use of different tools. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm asking a lot of the same questions, right, mm-hmm. regardless of form.
I'm just probably showing my really conservative point of view, so I apologize if that's the case.
No, this is
but
fun.
I am curious about this.
It's
stuff.
Fun.
Let's talk a little bit about the Texas Girl book.
Okay.
And I just have a few questions, really. So I know that you've written quite a bit in terms of criticism about narrative and loss.
Yeah.
About
dissertation project. Yeah.
But there's other stuff that you published along the way. Maybe there were chapters from the dissertation.
Not largely, but related things, certainly.
And this book is about, it's about a lot of things, but it's about choosing to be a single mother. So it's about motherhood, child rearing. I guess there's not really about child rearing. It's about this decision
That's the next project.
Right. And I did, by the way, notice, and I shouldn't have this recorded, but it's 9 chapters, and then there's birth. I did.
Yeah, that's not a coincidence, Michael.
I know it's not a coincidence, but it took me a while.
Yeah.
Are there connections? And I don't mean to sound maudlin or too metaphorical, but are there connections to be made between narrative of loss and motherhood? The themes of this of Texas Girl.
Certainly, right? I mean, my path to motherhood was not a straight linear process, right? But involved infertility treatment and miscarriage and all that stuff. So yeah, and I mean in a very literal right way, those things are connected. That's probably not a good answer to the question, but...
No, it's fine. It probably wasn't a good question. Or the way I phrased it... that's just generally about Texas Girl, which is, as you, I think you pointed out, is thoroughly about being a Midwesterner. And there is a lot in the book about... talks about being a Midwesterner and feeling out of place in Texas and so forth. And this is the Michigan Writers Series, so
right.
It's one of the softball questions I ask all the time is, what does it mean to be a Midwesterner? What does it mean to be an author of Midwestern literature? something in those directions.
Yeah, I don't know that that's a softball question necessarily. I mean, I think what you realize where you're from when you are displaced, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and really, there's the moment I talk about in that book when I was on a plane coming back from my job interview, just realizing what it meant potentially mm-hmm. right, to live in Texas, and going back to Indiana, and you know, I was there, I moved, and then it was September 11th, and, you know, had family in New York, I mean, which is not the Midwest, but, I mean, just felt very much, right, disconnected from everything that that I'd known. And yeah, that that memoir is absolutely about feeling out of place in certain kinds of ways, and trying, you know, both literally and metaphorically, and trying to figure out, you know, what it meant to be a single parent in this incredibly conservative area of the country, you know, and all that stuff. That said, I don't know that beyond that project, I really think about myself as a Midwestern writer so much. I don't engage a lot with issues of setting in poetry, say.
You talk about setting a lot in the
in
book.
Book, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But you know, as I'm kind of moving forward in my career, I think that's it. It's less an issue in my work. I mean, I'm very much a Midwestern person, you know, and I'm very glad to be back, you know, in the general Midwest area, because it does feel like home for me. I mean, having seasons, having snow, it hasn't gotten old yet. I've been here 10 years. I've been back 10 years.
Well, so. This is the only time you ever lived outside of the Midwest when you lived in Texas?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Illinois, went to graduate school in Indiana, spent 4 years in Texas, and now Michigan. So.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
In the suburbs.
In the suburbs.
Yeah.
North, west, south?
West.
West.
Yeah.
Okay. It makes a difference.
It does.
I lived in Chicago for 10 years. I don't know that much about the suburbs, but I know it makes a difference.
Yeah. I grew up in Glen Ellyn, and my mother's currently in Naperville, so pretty much dead west. Yeah.
The Frida, just one last thing. Frida Kahlo, in the connection, I think there's a connection to what I was asking before about motherhood loss.
Yeah.
In Frida Kahlo. You can talk about that if you want. But there is a big connection, obviously, the big Michigan connection, Detroit connection to Frida Kahlo. So that's why she was in the hospital for so long.
Yeah.
While Rivera's painting the mural. So was that in your mind at all when you were, because it's a Midwestern scene?
No, which is, it's just one of those weird, wonderful coincidences. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, there's the exhibit at the DIA, and I haven't been there yet. I'm like, can't wait for this semester to be over, and I'm going to check that out. I mean, I started writing about Kahlo's work when I was in Texas, actually, and Detroit was, you know, this faraway place that had nothing to do with me, really. And so those poems were pretty much set, and then it was just this kind of happy accident. But I'm asked that question pretty regularly if I do readings, because it seems like it has to be very intentional, and it's not. It's just one of those
just
nice
work out that way.
One of those nice details. Yeah.
Great. I don't know. Anything else? We can edit this part out. The questions I had are so dense because I was going through and I read some of these and I read some of the little bit of your dissertation and some of these articles, and I just said, I mean, it was just, this isn't, it's not talking about a narrative, a memoir, which is a very traditional, can be a very traditional thing. There's nothing real experimental about this.
No.
It's a beginning, a middle, and an end of the story. So
it was nice to write that way for once, too, to have a kind of chronology to, like, hang yourself on.
Yeah, you know? It goes from 1 to 9,
yeah,
and then birth.
And then you're done.
And then you're done. Well, there's afterbirth.
Well.
I suppose I was just going to ask about experimental memoir, and memoir is just a really difficult subject for some people, especially after the James Frey thing. I think memoir was in trouble for a little while in terms of Well, for all the traditional reasons, what do we trust as truth? And if you call something memoir, doesn't that mean something? Does it? Does it? What is the difference between memoir and autobiography?
Well, can I back up? Because I think there's a more interesting question, which is, I mean, does it matter if you call it memoir? I mean, absolutely, right? Just in terms of that book, at one point, very early in the process, I think it must have been a student intern or something was making a flyer for that book, just publicity, things like that, and wrote on it, it was a novel. And I went crazy. I was like, this is not a novel, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though structurally and for all intents and purposes, like really what is the difference? You know, but it in terms of reaching potential audiences and in terms of the way that project is conceptualized, right? It absolutely matters if you think of it as a true story. I mean, it is a true story. That sort of thing is, I think, absolutely critical. In terms of the question of, you know, what's the difference between memoir and autobiography, I mean, the way that I talk about it in class, I mean, I think about autobiography as a very expansive thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that it goes often from birth to death, mm-hmm. Or as close to, well, I mean, well, it's autobiography, you're not dead, right? But, it tells the chronology, right, of one's life in a kind of a big sense, whereas memoir, you know, you've got a particular lens, right, or thematic purpose or focus, so you can write arguably a bunch of different memoirs of one's life. I mean, Lauren Slater has notoriously done that. But autobiography is the bigger thing. And I also think just, you know, who gets to write an autobiography? I mean, it's largely famous people, right?
Largely?
Bill Clinton gets to
write. Well, memoirs would be the same thing, right? I mean, you can write memoirs, but if somebody won't publish it, that's a different question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with autobiography. Same thing with a novel.
That is true.
which is a good question, maybe to end on, which is, what were the choices made in wanting to publish a memoir versus a novel, or that treated the same? I mean, you could have published this as a novel.
I could.
Easily. Or almost just as easily.
Maybe.
You could rip the cover off.
I could do an experiment. I could try
it's
that.
It's a novel. So you made a conscious decision to publish it as a memoir.
Yeah.
What went into that?
Well,
I think I know the answer, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, like I said, I mean, I think it has to do with audience, right? And trying to tell a particular kind of story that hadn't been told before. And it reaches different people, I think. Right, because it's labeled, right, or marketed as a true story. I don't know. I mean, I think part of that truth telling is what makes it fundamentally, a memoir. I would make different choices if I were thinking about that as a novel. I think the story could be more more interesting in many ways. You know, because you can take liberties with it.
You can with memoir, too.
Small, you know, small things. I mean, I've changed people's names in there to protect them, not me. You could make, you know, all kinds of different
decisions.
I think
one of the big differences is what happens in the afterlife. Not our afterlife, but the afterlife.
That is a big question.
The afterlife of, you know, what is your relationship to the book after it's published? And who you become to other people, especially in terms of what is your so-called authority on this as a subject versus the novel as a subject versus, you know, and I think you've published or you've written for magazine-like kinds of things or websites on the subject.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be as relevant as for you as an authority if you're writing a novel versus a memoir. I don't know. I really don't know the answer to those questions. But I think it has to do with, you know, who the audience is. And
Absolutely.
Therefore what happens to you as the author of either a novel or a memoir or something else, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll do this again sometime.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I didn't realize we were going to talk about my life as an academic.
I didn't either until about 11 o'clock this morning. Actually, last night.